See, as we've journeyed through Scripture, many of you right here at Mosaic, as we've traveled through the Old Testament and into the Gospels and now in the book of Acts, or many of you because you've journeyed yourself through the Scripture, we have discovered some extraordinary things, have we not? I mean, we've discovered that we were created in the beginning of our human story for two extraordinary and wondrous realities: to know God and to make Him known, to experience fully the full implications of the freedom that comes with being a created being under the protection and divinity of our Creator, and to image Him. We were actually made in His image to image Him to all creation. We lost that privilege when we decided to pursue our own divinity instead of submitting ourselves to His divinity. We ate of the fruit, wanted to be like God, became something other than that. We became dead creatures. We had lost our life and our freedom. But we find out in the Old Testament, as we've traveled through, as you well know, that God made a promise that He would come and He would redeem, He would buy back that reality of death into life. And when we discover Jesus Christ entering onto the planet, we discover through the prophecies and the processes and the festivals and the feasts that God had established that He had this entire plan all along. Jesus was the promised one, the Messiah. He comes, and by age 30, we see Him do some amazing things. And what does He teach us? I am here to redeem you, to buy you back from the dead, to rescue your soul. You were dead, you were lost, I'm here to find you, man. And so we discover we're rescued. He's come to rescue us. And the rescue is basically taking our lostness, our distance from God, our deadness, and turning it into life and adopting us as children of God, not only bringing us into the kingdom of God, but creating a belonging that was unbelievable. And so we find ourselves completely rescued by the wondrous work of Christ on the cross and then His resurrection. And so we stand utterly free from the pursuit of all the junk we've been pursuing to try to fulfill ourselves on this planet. All the wind we chase after, as Solomon says. And what happens? We're standing there utterly free going, wow, what now? And He doesn't take us home to the kingdom. And that's when we discover the next part of the story, right? That Jesus did not only rescue our soul, but He restored our purpose. Our soul is rescued so we can know God. Our purpose is restored so we can make God known. And Jesus hands us a mission. It's more exciting, frankly, than saying go to the moon. He hands us a mission. He says this: I want you to go into all of the world, geographically covering every arena, going to every tribe, tongue, and nation. And I want you to carry what you've discovered, this freedom of redemption you've discovered. I want you to carry it out into the world as you go. And I want you to live in it, and I want you to express it, verbalize it, and demonstrate it, and then everyone that sees it will have the opportunity you had to discover it. And I, God, will do the story. I will write the story. I will do the work. You just go and do what I created you to do. Make me known. That's it. And then we discover in the early parts of this story, in the book of Acts, that God doesn't have a plan for a geography. He has a plan for generations. Generations. So our mission is in our generation to do our part in our geographical location and throughout the geographical locations of what our known world is, so that in the generations to come, they will do their part. So you suddenly start seeing an expansive story unfolding, right? A grand mission that over thousands of years, I will come and rescue my people. I will do it by sending you out on mission as the church. He establishes this community that is part of his generational church, this new expression of it in the book of Acts, where he goes, okay, listen, man, you guys are going to be this crazy cool community of ordinary folk that bring your best to the table and do extraordinary things because I'm going to be with you. And that's our story. That's our mission. So as I kind of grew up in my spiritual journey and sensed the calling into vocational ministry, which isn't any more sacred than any other calling on this planet. It's just the particular platform God called me into. As I called, saw my call into that, and Brooke and I started dreaming about what this expression of church might look like, that's what birthed this place. We moved here to Claremont because we wanted to see a local expression of this geographically global church that is generational in its story, birth here in the West Orlando area. I don't know why God brought me here. I just know he did. So I knew that this was my little piece in the big story, right? And so we started this church and we dreamed then of starting something that would express and would demonstrate and would display these realities we've discovered about Jesus, that it would make rescue felt and experienced and known, and it would call us into restoration and purpose and mission, right? So we wanted to be that place, and we said, we are going to exist to do this, to demonstrate our passion for God and his passion for people. There was the engaged, abiding experience and the missional experience. We want to demonstrate. We want to live this out. What did we say? We want to love God, we want to love people, and we want to serve the world. That's what we want to do. So we came together. And what we discovered in the early stages of our church is that that produced quite a tension in the church experience. Here's why, right? On the one hand, because we want to demonstrate our love for God, and we want to demonstrate our passion for God, and we want to demonstrate that we belong to God, by definition, it creates a missional world in our church. A missional world means this, that you're going to hear regularly from myself and others and those around you, you are called to live on mission. You are called out of your comfortable places, out of your comfortable life, out of your comfortable resources, out of your comforts across the board, and you are called into mess and into mission and into the realities of this world, both in your local context and your global context. So abandon your life for the sake of Christ and come give it all to him. Doesn't sound really fun, does it? You're like, whoa, oh, I don't know if I signed up for that. This looked like a fun place when I came. So on the one hand, you have this missional message that has to bleed into every arena, which means that on every level, from our smallest little human beings in this place to those who have the greatest wisdom of all, who have emerged on the other side of the story, in that entire scope, we cannot simply look at them and say, we just got to entertain, because that's not who we are. That's not what we've discovered. We have to bleed into them the reality of who they have been created to be, that they have been called into rescue so that they are utterly aware of their freedom and yet sent into purpose so that they are utterly ready to sacrifice themselves wholly for the mission of God. So we don't think that our four-year-olds are waiting to grow up so God can use them. We think God can use them now. We don't think our seven-year-olds are waiting to grow up so God can... No, no. God can use them now. They are intricate parts of the story. Very important. We don't think that when you hit 65, you're supposed to check out of the system. Ding, retired. Leave me alone. I want to play golf and pick up shells. No, we don't believe that that's part of the deal. We believe that at 65... you are checking into the story in a bigger way than you've ever checked in, because you are carrying all the wealth in this mind of yours, all the life experience, all the things you've known, the spiritual journey, and we need that. And so we are constantly laying out this very uncomfortable reality that opposes the cultural reality in which we've gotten altogether familiar living in. Be comfortable, be comfortable, be comfortable. But because we do love people, and because we want people to experience the wonder of their rescue, to have a felt experience of redemption, to know that when the gospel is in a place, it translates into holistic experience across the board, we also have to create an attractional reality here at Mosaic, right? So we can't just be missional, missional, missional. You walk in the door, hi, you ready to be uncomfortable? You better be. Can't do that. because then there is no experience of the mercies of God felt through the community of God, so that you can start going, I'm in awe of this freedom that I'm experiencing. So we have to create an environment that is constantly attractional, that says, man, you want to know what the gospel feels like? It feels like a warm donut on a Sunday morning. Yes, it does. It feels like a cup of coffee handed to you with latte art with a smiling face. Here, we love you. We want you to be comfortable. We want you to be happy. We want you to experience freedom. So here's what we do, right? Every day, we are constantly producing an environment that tells you we want you to be comfortable and happy and free and just have a blast, because we're going to call you out of comfort. We're going to call you into a life of misery. No, not misery. I'm just joking. We're going to call you into a life of sacrifice. And if you're going to produce those two things simultaneously, two things are going to be true. One, it's going to be a constant tension between the two worlds, because they seem to oppose one another, but they don't actually. See, they are the gospel. The gospel sets us free and calls us into the wondrous bondage of righteousness and freedom. We are bound by our freedoms. It's incredible. And so the church must do that. And the second thing that's true is this: that's gonna take a lot of work, because you can't settle into one or the other. You constantly need all of the work it would usually take to produce the attractional sense and all of the work it would usually take to produce the missional sense. And that has to happen within the singular context of this community. And so 10 years ago, we began that journey. And I gotta tell you, year after year after year, and especially as we look back this year on our 10th anniversary, look back at 10 years, and from my vantage point, though there are still many things we have to learn, many things we have to figure out as we go, we are realizing the dreams that we had. We are seeing an environment that is beginning to emerge that is both missional and attractional, both rescue and restoration, both calling us into the freedoms of Christ and calling us out into the sacrificial life. And that is emerging. And it is emerging because hundreds of people, in the midst of their call out of the attractional, comfortable life into the missional life, have brought to the table in this place, in the context of this little story, the best that they've had. They have brought their talents to the table. They have brought their time to the table. They have brought their treasures, their finances, their resources to the table. I have watched it over 10 years. It started with a very small group of people that had to bleed harder than we should bleed. And then it emerged into a larger group of people that were attracted in, but then called into mission and started bleeding with us. And so as ordinary people began to bring their best to the table, we started emerging into a life where we saw week after week, month after month, year after year, we were realizing the vision of becoming a place that was raising people into freedom and then catapulting them into mission. But that came at a lot of hard work by a lot of ordinary people that decided that living a life of mission included living on mission within the walls of the church. We here at Mosaic Church are huge at living on mission in our local and global community. But living on mission within these walls isn't any less wondrous or any more wondrous. It is just part of the grand story that we're called into. And so as those people stepped into play, here's what began to happen. See, we have this global generational story going on, that throughout generations, the church is expanding into the darkness and into the death and into the bondage, and bringing light and life and freedom to that by carrying the reality of the gospel out. And we, you and me, have been planted in this particular generation to be part of this particular generational church. We are part of a church that spans generations, but this is our little piece in the story. And then we were called, because we can't be a church big enough to span a geographical globe, we were called into the global geographical context of the United States of America. And then we were called from there into the Orlando, and then the West Orlando, and then the Oakland. See? And we were called into this expression of that reality. We're part of something much bigger. We're trying to get people to the moon and back. But we are this little piece of the puzzle. But then in the same way, God, calling the church his body, says that the church is made up of many parts and every part equally important. So if you're a finger, don't say to the eye, I wish it was an eye. Or if you're a finger, don't go and lay down on the couch. That would be very odd. Can we go now? Fingers laying on the couch. All right, we'll hang here. See, the Bible says, don't do that. Each part is critical to the whole. And so this mission, this impossible mission of carrying the good news of the gospel through all of the things that will oppose it, starting with the Roman government and the Jewish leadership. I mean, you couldn't start something more vulnerable in a more hostile environment. And yet, what happened to it? Well, look around. This is what happened to it. It emerged through the geographic and generational boundaries and landed in our laps. The gospel came here, despite the fact that it was an impossible idea. And here we are, and it is our call to represent that gospel for the next generation, to carry it well, to honor the gospel in our lives, and to honor the gospel in our words. And as a church, we're called into that. But then here it is, because we are the body of Christ, and you are part of the church, you are a piece of that body. And so for the church in Oakland to realize its mission in West Orlando, to realize its mission in Orlando, to realize the part it plays in the greater mission of the United States and the geographical mission, and to ultimately affect generations, it comes all the way down to you and me. And God says, man, you got to step into the story, man. You are invited. It's like NASA coming to you in 59 and saying, we've heard about you. You have some stuff we could use. There's others that have the same stuff, but we're asking you first. That's how it should feel. You know how church volunteerism usually feels? All right, folks, listen, we have a great need. And if you don't show up, we're going to die. Please sign up. That's not how it's supposed to feel. It's supposed to be this way. If you'd like, I mean, don't tell anyone, but there's an opportunity that you could step into and be missional within this particular expression, and if you are, when the dream is realized, you will sit back and go, wow, I was part of that. See, can you imagine what it must have been like to watch that little square box, you know, static, as Neil Armstrong stepped out onto the moon, and you were the guy that created the nuts and the bolts that held the heat shield in place as they came back into the Earth's atmosphere, and when they landed in the ocean, they survived, and you worked on that in the Mercury project. But they were using the same nuts and bolts on the Apollo project on the moon. See how that changes the story? Now you're not like, it's so beautiful to be an American. I'm so beautiful. You'd be going, come here, kids. Your dad. You see that? You can't really see it, but you see that little nut right there? I made that nut. You did? Yep. Took some work, I'm telling you, man. We had to use a special kind of metal and do some stuff, and it works. How do you know? Well, when we were bringing poor Shepherd back, we thought he would die, but he didn't. So the nuts held. It's awesome. See how that changes the story? And that's what we're called into. As people, we're called into this story. And so what we begin to realize is that there are these pieces and parts that we get to play, and we have an option. As human beings that are part of a church, we have an option. We can sit and be participants by stepping into the story and joining a team and engaging our finances and engaging our talents and engaging our time, or we can sit back and when the mission happens and the dreams are realized, we can cry and weep and say, I love that church. That's my church. What did you do there? Nothing, but I go there. And you can do that. That is one of the possible invitations. But it's a very, very sad way to live in a community that is creating miraculous realities because you're not actually part of it. You're just there. And it's like being an American with a space program. It's cool because you joined the right country, but you didn't really participate in making it happen. But if you helped make it happen, no matter how small of a piece you play, it is awesome. This is best captured in another story that has to do with the Apollo mission. It's a story in Apollo 13. They sent Apollo 13 up, and Apollo 13 was supposed to land on the moon too, except that something went desperately wrong, as many of you know. and the spacecraft broke in space. And so not knowing what on earth to do, they had to improvise on everything. So now they mobilize all of those teams that work on progressive schedules, and they bring them and they go, we have 2 days to save 3 lives and get them back here. We're not going to lose them in space. These 3 guys literally should have died in space, no doubt about it. But they stood together and they said, we're going to change our mission from getting to the moon to getting 3 guys that are supposed to die in space back to planet Earth. And they mobilized those same ordinary people into now teams that they'd never been on to do things they'd never thought about doing. But because they knew our mission is the same, we're part of the space program, and when we need to, we bind together, some crazy cool stuff happened. And there was a particular scene in the movie Apollo 13 where they realized the guys were running out of oxygen, which is kind of difficult because no matter how well the entire team of NASA people work to get a spacecraft back to Earth, if the spacecraft runs out of oxygen while in space, then they get back to Earth with 3 dead guys. So they knew they needed to mobilize a team, but the problem is the filter was square, and the other filter was round, and so the square thing couldn't fit into the round hull, and so they came up with a plan. Take a look at the scene, and I'll explain.
Gene, we have a situation brewing with the carbon dioxide.
We had a CO2 filter problem on the lunar module.
5 filters on the limb,
which were meant for 2 guys for a day and a half.
So I told the doc,
you're already up to 8 on the gauges. Anything over 15 and you get impaired judgment, blackouts, the beginnings of brain asphyxia.
What about the scrubbers on the command module?
They take square cartridges.
The ones on the limb are round.
Tell me this isn't a government operation.
This just isn't a contingency we've remotely looked at.
Those CO2 levels are going to be getting toxic.
Well, I suggest you gentlemen invent a way to put a square peg in a round hole. Rapidly.
Okay, people, listen up. People upstairs handed us this one, and we gotta come through. We gotta find a way to make this fit into the hole for this using nothing but that. Let's get it organized.
Okay, let's build a filter.
Better get some coffee going.
I just love that scene. Because the reality is, right after that scene, they come running into the big, huge room, and they're carrying all this stuff, and they're like, did you figure it out? And they're like, yes, we figured it out. And then they give it the manual to the guys in space, and they get this done. And you know what happens? Because they fix the problem, suddenly the CO2 diminishes, the fresh air increases, and they breathe again. One of the things we said at Mosaic Church years ago is that we wanted Mosaic Church to be a breath of fresh air to people. Regardless of your background, your religious background, your non-religious background, irrelevant to us. We wanted you to walk in here and go, oh, wow, this just, everything about this feels free and wondrous and awesome. But to pull that off takes an extraordinary team of people to make that happen. You see, we get to go to our blue shirt team and we say to them, look, when someone walks into the door, they are uncomfortable. They're feeling weird. Have you ever walked into a new church? It is a scary place. You're about to be judged. You know it. You feel it in your soul. And you're like, who's going to judge me? Who's going to judge me? And so you're walking around scared, and it is our job to intersect that moment and to bring into it hope and light and freedom. So go do that. And then we talk to the children's ministry teams. We're like, okay, you're bringing kids in. And you're like, I will not let them go. They will know this place is horrible. And then you've got to create a space where they go, oh, where'd the kids go? They ran into there. They want to play with that slide. Oh, really? No kidding. And then we talk to our coffee bar teams, and we talk to our donut teams, and we talk to our tech teams, and we talk to our worship teams, and we talk to, and I could go on and on and on, our parking teams, and those teams that do facilities during the week, and how clean this place is, and what the bathrooms look like, and everything, all of it matters. Because at any point in time that any one of those things go awry, it creates carbon dioxide, and it diminishes the freedom in which we live. But then simultaneously, that's just the attractional side. We have teams of people that are engaging people into life groups and engaging people into discipleship relationships and engaging people, students and children, into a journey spiritually with God. And those teams of people need to be highly trained and well put together. We need life groups throughout the week so that we can actually put people into homes and they can experience that. So we need host homes and life group leaders. And so we mobilize all those teams. And we go, okay, your part in the story is to move people into the rescue and freedom that they experience so that they will realize their restored purpose and so that they will live it out. And so that all starts happening. And before you know it, because hundreds of people week in and week out bring to bear their financial resources by giving and tithing consistently and regularly in this place, and bring to bear their time by coming regularly and consistently into this place or inviting this place into their homes, and giving of their talents by learning and growing here so that they can engage what they know and what they can do into the larger story, we start seeing those realities unfold and we start seeing our dreams realized. And so we stand here, honestly, on this day as we look at the reality of what was been born in the Acts chapter 4 and chapter 5 community. And we realize that this is what it was talking about, right? We've been in Acts 4 and 5 and we saw the community come together and they had all things in common, sharing all that they had for the sake of the community, for the sake of the gospel. And they brought all their junk to the table because they were authentic and vulnerable, saying, hey, here I am, speak into me, being submissive to one another. We see this miraculous community born, and God is calling us in this generation to say it can happen again. It can happen again. But if it's going to happen again, it's going to take all of us, not some of us. Not 20% of the 80% who are deeply engaged while 80% sit in the seats and go, love this church, man. So glad I'm part of that mission. No. It's going to take all of us stepping into the story, engaging in some capacity. Maybe you engage financially, consistently, and regularly through the tithes and offerings. Maybe you engage consistently in time, serving in the children's ministry, the tech teams, the coffee bar, or some other arena. Maybe you are a life group host or a life group leader. Maybe you bring your talent to the table. Maybe it's a combination of all of that or some of that, but it is being engaged in some way. That's the beauty of the invitation of a community like this. Not needing you to engage because otherwise we can't pull it off, but inviting you to engage because if you do, we can pull off things we never imagined. We can go to moons we never even knew existed. And that's our goal. But it's also an opportunity to stand here on this side of the coin and go, we only stand here 10 years into the story because many of you sitting in this place have engaged. You have engaged. And today I want to raise my glass to you. Because we don't stand here without you. See, if you've wondered, man, I've been serving in this ministry or that ministry, or I've been tithing here regularly and giving, or I've painted walls and I've built tables, and I mean, is it really making any difference? I mean, is my time really making any difference? Then you be reminded today that you are that little team in that little room. And we said to you, please go, make this fit into this and do it fast. And you did. You painted a wall. You built a table. You stepped into a children's ministry. You jumped on a tech team. You learned that silly coffee machine and burned yourself several times. You stand behind the table with the donuts to hear all the people complain about the fact that they're the wrong donuts. See, all of that is true. And you do that, and you stand in a room, and this is what you say. The people upstairs gave us a mission. It's a small mission in the big scheme of things, but we better come through, because if we don't, then oxygen diminishes, carbon dioxide rises, and people get all crazy in the head, and sometimes they die. And we are the ones gifted of God to be able to make change in that. So to you that serve on any one of our ministry teams, man, kudos to you. I toast you today. Thank you for all that you have done. Some of you here were part of the Mercury Project 9 years ago. Some of you part of the Gemini Project 5 years ago. It exhausted you. I get it. You're resting for a while. Good for you. Some of you are part of the Apollo Project now, looking into our future. And some of you have not yet engaged in the story. If you've been sitting around here for a while, you've gotten lots of rest, lots of freedom birthed into you, we're very glad. Time to engage. Time to go, no. I'm not going to be part of the past. I'm going to be part of the future. See, our story has just begun. So the great news is I'm not here to say, toasting all those that got us here, sorry for the rest of you, you're out of luck. No, I'm going like this. Toasting those of you that got us here, thanking you with all my heart, and calling the rest of you into the story to join those so that we can do a great work. In Galatians chapter 6, Paul writes and says, do not grow weary in doing good. Don't do that. Because you know that in time it will bear fruit if you do not give up. So serve one another in love, and especially those who are part of God's community. It's a call into serving one another. And then in Hebrews chapter 12, the author of Hebrews writes these words. He says, "Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us cast off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked before us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith." You see, he says, what you do is this. You look back to the men and women that have gone before you, and then you stand on their shoulders. And because of what God has produced through them, you step into the game so that God can produce it through all of you. And so, those of you that have done it, thank you. Those of you that are going to be doing it soon, get on it. Get on it. Because here's what you don't want to be. 10 years from now, you don't want to be sitting in this church. And we've accomplished miraculous things. And with tears in your eyes, you say, "I'm so glad I'm part of this church." And someone says to you, maybe your kid, "So what part have you played?" And you go, "Well, I come here." I come here isn't part of the story. If you've engaged your finances, your time, or your talents in any way, consistently and regularly, then you get to say, "I made the bolt that holds the heat shield in place that saved those people's lives." And that's what you want to be part of, because it changes the way you experience the gospel. It changes the way you experience the community, and it changes what this community can and will do for the gospel as we play our part. I want to close with the last little piece. This is to all of you that have given of your heart and soul, brought your best to the table over the years, and especially those of you that are currently engaged on one of our teams or engaged in consistent and regular financial giving here. For those of you that are doing that, that are part of that story, this video is for you. It's a little thank you to remind you that we need you desperately, and we're grateful that you're part of the story. Take a listen.
I love coming and worshiping the Lord. I love how effortless it feels. It feels like it's just me and God, that we're just together and I'm communing with Him. I know that behind the scenes, there's a lot of effort that goes into making that possible. There are a lot of people that do sound and they practice during the week, but it doesn't feel that way when I'm here. It just feels that I'm alone with my Lord. So thank you to everybody that makes that possible. It really means a lot to us.
I would just like to give a big shout out and a thank you to all the women at Cafe Conversations for helping me during a time of back surgery when I needed rescuing, and they came to my aid in every way. And so I would like to thank everybody at Cafe Conversations and all of the women's ministries.
Hey, I just wanted to come to you as a new member of Mosaic and thank the Guest Connections team as well as the Blue Shirts. And thank them for welcoming me into the living room of the Mosaic family. They do such a great job of smiling, hugging, and welcoming me in. I joined the team. I'm excited to be a new blue shirt and excited to welcome the rest of our family in. Again, thanks again, Blue Shirts, for being such a loving and welcoming group.
Before Mosaic, my family and I did not attend church, and our friend continued to ask us to come to Mosaic, and we repeatedly said no. She then told us about the event that was happening at Mosaic, the Fall Festival. So purposely that morning, we did not make the sermon, but we did come to the Fall Festival. Upon arriving, we were just overwhelmed by what church really looks like. It was not what I thought it was. So thank you, Mosaic, and thank you to all the event volunteers who make these things happen. It's because of you that we have been coming back to Mosaic.
I joined my life group about a year ago and knew right away this was a special group. I really felt connected with them. And it seemed like whenever I was having a bad day, I would go to life group and they would gather around me, encourage me, and pray for me. But on the other hand, when I was having a good day, I wanted to make sure that I went to make sure that I was encouraging others in my group. I want to thank the life group leaders for giving us this opportunity to step into community with others, and also thank the other leaders and those that host life groups around the church for stepping in.
Our family's been coming to Mosaic for 2 years now, and youth ministry has been extremely impactful in our kids' lives. Michael and Kaylee have, we've seen them grow, and it's been largely because of the influence of the leadership in youth ministry. They've been there for the highs and the lows in their lives, and we can see it in their walk with Christ.
I know we're not the only family who's been blessed by the student ministries, and I just want to thank all of you who serve.
Before I came to Mosaic, I really didn't like coffee all that much, but now the coffee here is one of my favorite reasons for coming to Mosaic. My favorite drink is the Aloha Latte. Everyone try it out. And also, everybody at the coffee bar is always so smiley and happy, and it makes me feel very special when they always remember my name. So thank you, everyone at the coffee bar, for always doing a great job.
I grew up in the children's ministry, and I just have so many great memories from when I was a kid, vacation Bible school, and Christmas plays, and it was just so much fun. And then when I became a teenager, I decided that there's no other place I would want to serve than in the children's ministry, because I just have so many great memories from when I was a kid. And I just want to say a great big thank you to all the volunteers who work there every single week. So thanks.
I love Sundays because right as I wake up, I think of church. And right as I get to church, I always go straight to the donuts because the donuts are my favorite. My favorite donut is glazed. And Sunday's my favorite day because it's just like Saturday but with donuts. And so thank you to all the people that hand out the donuts in the middle of the circle because I love the donuts.
You know, we always said that for our children in this place, I want to come here ahead of every other thing in their week. And if a donut is all it takes to do that, then that's what we'll do. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, don't you want to wake up as a parent and want your kids to beg you to be in a place? And what if that place was church? Do you know how rare that is? But it's not going to be here. And that's because of the hundreds of people that pour themselves in. So that after the donut, the experience just gets deeper and deeper and deeper and better and better and better until eventually, one day, it is that same child who is now an adult serving in a team, on a ministry, in the globe somewhere and saying, man, it started with a donut, but it ended with mission. And that's why we do what we do, and that's what we invite you into participating with. So, to all of you that do it already, thank you from the bottom of our hearts. And to all of you that have not yet engaged, would you prayerfully consider what it would look like to start stepping into engagement here within the story, stepping into hosting or playing a role in life groups or jumping on one of our teams or engaging financially here? If you don't consistently and regularly give of your time, talent, or treasure in this place, then may I challenge you, may I invite you to start doing that. Because when you start doing that on any level, regularly and consistently, it changes everything for you and it changes everything for us. And in that, it changes everything for the advancement and exponential movement of freedom and of life and of light as the gospel goes forward. Who wouldn't want to be part of that story? Would you pray with me? God, I just pray that you would stir in us, for those of us that are here, that are serving currently, that have been serving and that are consistent in serving, that are giving and have been giving and are consistent in giving. God, when it gets tough, when it gets hard, when things get tight, when time gets tight and money gets tight, things get tight, or we just get tired and weary, would you stir in us, Galatians chapter 6, and just say, hey, don't give up in doing good. Don't do it, because you know it's going to bear fruit if you don't give up. So just keep serving the others, serving me. God, may you just whisper that to them. May you give them perseverance and encouragement and just a great joy in the things that they do. For those here, God, that are not engaged, that are fairly new to the story. God, if they're here because they need rest, if they're here because they need to be loved, because they need freedom, because they're still journeying with you and they come from tired places, worn out places, God, I pray you just whisper to their hearts right now and say, hey, this message wasn't for you. You're just here to rest. You're just here to receive. Sit, be comfortable, don't worry about it. God, would you whisper that to them? Because I know there are some here that just that just need not to get engaged right now and just need to be still and to receive from those of us that are engaged. And then God, for those that are here that have been around for a while now, this is their home and they attend here, but they're not in the story yet. God, would you just call them into the story? Invite them into the adventure in a new and extraordinary way. God, whisper to them what it is they need to do, whether it's joining a team or writing a check or whatever it is that you, that first step that you're saying, start doing this consistently because this is your story and you are a part of this body. Would you tell them that, God? And would you let them know that it is for their spiritual journey that you are inviting them into the story? God, thank you that you've given us an impossible mission that seems to be constantly advancing into the impossible, and that you've called us each to play a critical role in it. May we take the mission you've given us, and may we work diligently toward it, bringing our best to the table for it. We love you, Jesus. We pray in your precious and holy name. Amen.